Good morning, everybody. So nice to be with you, those I know, those I don't know. I am joining you here. My home is in a little town called McKinleyville, Northern California, and way up in the Redwoods on the coast, the land of the Wiat. And I'm very, very happy to be here. Let's just start out by taking a look at each other. Just see each other's faces. Notice that we are guests in each other's homes or wherever you're calling from. And so we open up our hearts in that way that we are guests with each other. Here's Anna. How nice to see you again, Anna. Oh, lovely. Sylvia's here. I mean, everybody to name. You know what's so great about looking at each other is, nobody knows who's looking at whom when. So no need to be bashful. And even John's cat is here and Viv's cat is here. So we welcome all beings, the more than human beings. I love doing this. And it's so often that people do have their kitties around and they walk in front of the camera and they are definitely part of our sangha. Dogs, not so much, birds, not so much, but kitties, often. It's a nice reminder of all life. So how we'll do our morning today is we'll start shortly with an arriving meditation. I'll offer a few short Dharma thoughts before our longer meditation, and then a longer Dharma talk, and plenty of time to talk with each other along the way. So let's begin by arriving, welcoming yourself into a posture that feels just right for you today, whether you're seated or standing. Maybe you're reclining. If you need a wrap, so you're at ease temperature-wise, grab a wrap. Eyes open or eyes closed. Just sensing your whole self arriving, letting each in-breath be an arriving, each out-breath a settling. And from the very beginning, inviting yourself to rest in that space before the next breath comes in. Arriving, settling, and resting. It's so natural. It's what we do all the time, and it's so easy not to notice. Being here. Getting a sense of the body connected to whatever it's touching, the furniture, the floor itself. Connected to what's here right now. And then inviting a quality of listening in, turning the awareness inward, opening the space of the heart. Being here. If there's anywhere in the body that you're noticing might be a little tight or constricted, some habitual holding, see if you can bring some caring, softening energy to that space. Maybe it's the brow, the jaw, the shoulders, maybe the belly or the hands, even the pelvic floor. On the exhale, softening. And in this softening, in this arriving, in this invitation to be here, to listen in, there's the quality, there's the space for the sati to arrive, to emerge. Sati, this soft receptivity of mind, heart, that makes space for the mindfulness to emerge. So this beautiful, dignified posture of uprightness, of attentiveness, yet relaxation, prepares the whole being for this receptivity, for this awareness. And then bringing to mind anything that has happened recently that you find meaningful, some meaningful experience, exchange from recent times that has stuck with you. Just let that be here. Doesn't have to be anything big. Opening a space inside to remember what is important for you. This is a poem called "Can You Hear It?" by Paula Lepp. There are days when, although I try to open myself to wonder, wonder just won't be found. Or perhaps it is more accurate to say on those days I am simply blind to what the world has to offer, until I look down and there, beside the sidewalk, are blades of grass completely enrobed in ice, shimmering in the glow of the setting sun, and as they sway and move into each other, if I listen, really listen, even they are singing faint little bell notes of joy. Good morning again. It's such a pleasure, and I really mean it. It's such a pleasure to be here with everybody in community, in Sangha, practicing together. And the reason I say I really mean it is that I, maybe like you, really take refuge in this beautiful practice of awareness, of community. And some of you know, and this is all just public information now, that my husband and I are embarking on a very big move. And we're going to move geographically from California to Colorado sometime this year. Sooner than later, I don't really know. And we've been in the same house for 28 years, in the same community for 44 years. And it's kind of crazy. You know, like, what are we doing, turning our lives upside down and inside out? But we're doing it so we can go live near our kids. And it's very exciting. And there are many wonderful things about it. And I share this with you because as this train is speeding up of getting ready to put our house on the market, and we're purging, and I imagine, you know, some of you maybe been in a house that long too, how much stuff one accumulates over nearly 30 years, and yikes. So I am finding that the place where I feel most grounded is right here. I just to be in Sangha, to be practicing with everybody, whether I'm a participant or I'm in this role of teaching, it doesn't matter. This helps me put it all down, to get the to really understand priorities, come back to clarity, come back to balance. And so if you ever really wonder, yeah, well, I wonder if those teachers really mean what they say. I think so. I think so. You know, somebody said to me recently, I know you say this, Heidi, that this is really important for you, and that you are finding as much grounding and ease and peace and everything that we get out of practice as you think we are. But I wonder if that's really, is she really telling the truth? Yeah, I'm telling the truth. This is really important to me, and it doesn't, I am very aware at my great good fortune to be in a path of practice that offers so much, I think, stability despite the difficulties of our world, which are certainly true, and we all know that. So I share that with you because I want to talk today about staying connected to those things that really matter to us. And there's a line in a William Stafford poem that the first line is, starting here, what do you want to remember? Starting here, what do you want to remember? It's such a beautiful prompt because it's so easy to forget. Right, and this is a practice we know over and over again of remembering to remember the preciousness of our lives, remembering to remember that noticing what is beautiful and good balances the difficulties, remembering to remember that yes, everything is changing all of the time, and we do the best that we can. A few years ago, I read Atul Gawande's book, Being Mortal. Has anybody read it? Some people have read that book. It's really something. I highly recommend it. Atul Gawande is a palliative care physician who did a lot of research into where have nursing homes come from? What has happened in the culture of aging and illness and death that we have a culture that segregates out a segment of our population into these care homes. And one of the things that has become very important to him in this, in his work, was to really make sure that his patients, who they were, was really acknowledged. And part of his care plan was to say to them, what's really important to you? What's something that happens in your day that's really meaningful? Because when we ask that question, what is perhaps, you can phrase this however you want, what is the most important part of your day? What is the most meaningful part of your day or your life? What happens when we ask those questions of each other is We actually are asking for what's true, what's real, what is your value, and we're recognizing each other's value. I want to know what's important to you, because one size doesn't fit all. So this was a while ago when I read that book, but at the time I was doing groups for in-person groups for elderly people who live with very difficult disease processes. And we were doing this group, and I asked this question. I said, so what's important to you? What's the most meaningful part of your day? And I will never forget this, which is why I'm sharing this with you now, because it's been a while. This one gentleman, he pushed back in his chair like this, and he reached back, and he said, you know, the most meaningful part of my day is when I wake up, but I haven't opened my eyes yet. I know I'm awake, and I can see the light, that it's daylight, through my eyelids, and I know I've woken up again. And that is the most meaningful part of my day. Can we be that aware? I've woken up again. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh used to talk about this. He has a piece about talking about, I woke up again, 24 more hours available to me. And sometimes, you know, when we wake up again and things are not going so well in our lives, that can be painful, but it's another opportunity to cultivate, how am I going to be with my life? Can I see the good? So as I am personally coming into this time of big change, and I'm excited about it, and it's really disruptive, I am asking myself these same questions. What is the most meaningful part of my day? Starting here, what do I want to remember? And maybe that question is many times a day, because I'm always starting here, having lunch with a friend, going for a walk with my husband, whatever it is, starting here, what do I want to remember? Don't miss your life. The other question, you know, we talk about this question in practice a lot. What do I know to be true? What do you know to be true? What is the most important thing? And of course, you know, that third question, what is the most important thing? Or what is the most meaningful part of the day? Or any of these questions, they may have multiple answers and they change a lot, but there are some fundamental baselines, I think, that don't change. So, you know, that very famous story about Suzuki Roshi, that one of his students went to him and said, okay, Roshi, you're at the end of your life. What have you really learned? What is the most important thing? And his answer is to find out what is the most important thing. It was such a beautiful invitation into inquiry, because there's not one most important thing, or maybe the most important thing is to keep going, to keep being curious, to find out. So this is not about that there's an end of this journey. It's the journey itself, which is so cliche, but you know, cliches become cliches because they're true. It really isn't about the end point. It is about everything that happens on the way. And can we be that present with each other and for each other? To listen generously, to listen intently when we're together, not just like this, but when you are together with anybody else, it's so easy to be distracted, isn't it? And yet, this is a practice that keeps inviting us to do one thing at a time. So here's an invitation. If you are not on your cell phone now, if you're not using your cell phone for Zoom, maybe consider putting it out of your line of sight for our time together. Seriously, yeah, way to go, Lily. Because you know what? There's a way in which it's going, check me, you know, there's like this really awful thing that is happening with these devices. So Carlita and I were talking right before class, and I said, hang on a minute. And I went and put my phone so where I really can't even see it, because it just has got its tentacles through the airwaves. And so we get to be more present, to really be here when we intentionally say, not now. I want to be right here because I don't want to miss a moment of this. And so we come to this practice. I'll speak for me, but I have a hunch for you too, is that we come to the Dharma and listen to talks or read or talk about it because we are exploring and wrestling with different kinds of questions about what does it mean to be alive? Any permutation of what does it mean to be alive in my life, our lives. And we don't have to know the answers, and we don't even have to find the answers. The important thing is that we're exploring. Rachel Naomi Raymond, she said, perhaps the secret of living well is not in having all the answers, but pursuing unanswerable questions in good company. Pursuing unanswerable questions in good company. I love that. And so I come here because I know I am in really good company. It's safe, it's loving, it's kind. Sometimes people push back and say, I don't agree with you. Wonderful. Let's do that. I mean, sometimes people even write to me and say, you got it wrong. Okay. This is part of it. We come with our different views, and the invitation is, can we meet our different views with respect, with care? So listen. So starting here, what do you want to remember? What is meaningful for you? What do you know to be true? Can you listen intently? And we're not just talking about listening outwardly intently. We're talking about what's happening in here. What do you know to be true in your gut, in your heart? So here's a story I'll read to you. This comes from the opening section of Jack Kornfield's book, The Wise Heart. In a large temple north of Thailand's ancient capital, Sukhothai, there once stood an enormous and ancient clay Buddha. Though not the most handsome or refined work of Thai Buddhist art, it had been cared for over a period of 500 years and become revered for its sheer longevity. Violent storms, changes of government, and invading armies had come and gone, but the Buddha endured. At one point, however, the monks who tended the temple noticed the statue had begun to crack and would soon be in need of repairing and repainting. After a stretch of particularly hot, dry weather, one of the cracks became so wide that a curious monk took his flashlight and peered inside. What shone back at him was a flash of brilliant gold. Inside the plain old statue, the temple residents discovered one of the largest and most luminous gold images of the Buddha ever created in Southeast Asia. Now uncovered, the golden Buddha draws throngs of people from all over Thailand and beyond. The monks believe that this shining work of art had been covered in plaster and clay to protect it during times of conflict and unrest. In much the same way, each of us has encountered threatening situations that lead us to cover over our innate nobility. And just as the people of Sukhothai had forgotten about the golden Buddha, sometimes we too have forgotten our essential nature. Much of the time we operate from a protective layer. And the primary aim of our practice is to help to see beneath this armoring and bring out our original true goodness, our Buddha nature. So we are invited over and over again to get to know these protective layers. That just happen, right? They happen from living a life. This is not about fault. I remember Wes Nisker used to say, you are not your fault. And when he said that, I thought, wait a minute, I have to think about that. Because I do have to think about that. We are not our fault. We have so much conditioning genetic conditioning, familial, etc. But we are responsible for our choices, for sure. And we can make a choice to look inward, to understand who we are, how we are, and to go forward from there. And slowly, and I think with the help of this practice, in particular heart practices, our capacity deepens, the layers start to crack. They crack when we feel safe, when we are part of community that is loving and kind. It happens bit by bit, and those layers start to fall away, and they open to a certain kind of intimacy, I think. An intimacy where everything can be touched, known, and even welcomed. What is it like to be intimate with ourselves? And sometimes it's wonderful, and sometimes it's terrifying, and it's like everything in between. But this is a practice that invites us into deeply befriending ourselves with the quality of no matter whatness. Our joys too, really letting ourselves feel our joys. So this is what I want to do today, is we'll talk about what do we deeply know? How can we meet ourselves? By remembering something meaningful that happened recently, that's a way of keeping that alive, touching in. So let's move into a meditation. Finding a posture that feels comfortable. You know, and when I say feels comfortable, that doesn't mean slouch. It doesn't mean just give it up. It means let yourself sit in a beautiful, or sit, stand, recline in a dignified, attentive posture that is both awake and attentive, yet relaxed, so you can be comfortable. So turning the awareness inward. Again, closed eyes or open eyes. If your eyes are open, please have a gentle gaze downward, softening the face, maybe unhinging the jaw, letting the tongue rest gently in the mouth. Dropping the shoulders, relaxing the arms, wrists, hands, and fingers. Letting the belly soften all the way down through the pelvis, the pelvic floor, the legs, the feet and toes. Yet holding enough energy in the back of the body, sensing the rise of the spine from the tailbone to the crown of the head. A sense of your equanimity, your stability in the back body. And then the front of the body. Let the front of the body be soft and receptive. Open. Strong back, soft front, creating space for the breath to come and go, for the heart to open and be here, however it is. Finding that place where it makes most sense for you to settle your attention. It might be staying with the breath, very specifically, the in-breath, the out-breath, the pause. Maybe it's settling right where you feel the breath the most and the motion the body makes in response to breathing. How there's a little movement, maybe you stay there. Or maybe there's a sensation in the body, the pressure sensation right where the sit bones meet the cushion, the furniture, or the bottoms of the feet. Maybe metta practice is what you choose for today. Or some combination, whatever feels most appropriate for you, do that. And we invite this meditation with this beautiful invocation. O nobly born, that means us. O nobly born, you who are the sons and daughters of the awakened ones, the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, remember who you are, your luminous mind, the goodness of your heart. Trust it. Return to it. It is home. So settling in. Come back when the mind goes somewhere else. Know that it's not a problem. Come back to this quality of home inside of you over and over again. Noticing if anywhere has tightened. Oftentimes, there's some habitual holding that the body does. It's so ingrained. In meditation, we're invited to notice what's happening. The state of mind, busy or quiet, the state of heart, any amount or of opening or closing, emotions that flow through. There might be discomfort in the body. There might be comfort, likely both. Sending softening, caring energy down through the body. Anywhere that needs it will feel it. Anywhere that's comfortable will also be nurtured. You can trust the care that you give yourself. Noticing the quiet that's here, the quiet that is inside of you, any amount, any quiet that surrounds you. Trusting this stillness, opening to the stillness right here. From wherever you are, sensing the steadiness that the stillness cultivates, the steadiness in your own body, your own mind and heart, your entire being, mind, heart, body, spirit, no matter what is happening in your life, right in this moment, we are still together. And there's a quality of capacity that grows when we come together and steady the mind, open the heart, be willing to be right here. This refuge in the Sangha, the very real felt experience of refuge in Sangha. Sensing that. And now drawing the attention into the heart. Imagine breathing in and out of the heart space, in from every direction, back out into every direction. Especially remembering and noticing the back of the heart. So easy to be moving forward, forgetting where we've been or just not sensing behind us. Every breath in a receiving, every breath out a releasing. Goodness in, goodness out, nourishment in, letting go on the out breath of whatever you don't need. A little bit of metta practice, repeating these phrases to yourself, these classical phrases. May I feel safe and protected. May I feel peaceful and happy. May I be healthy and strong. May I live with ease and well-being. And out of this steadiness that we've each cultivated by sitting still together, we offer our intentions out, the goodness of our practice out for all those not able to sit still, not able to have stability in their lives, to know a little safety and peace and ease. May all those who are suffering find safety and protection. May all those who are suffering have enough to eat, feel a little peace. May all those who are suffering find strength, ease, and well-being. We'll end with this poem called Safety Net by Rosemary Wautola Traumer. This morning I woke thinking of all the people I love and all the people they love and how big the net of lovers. It felt so clear, all those invisible ties interwoven like silken threads, strong enough to make a mesh that for thousands of years has been woven and rewoven to catch us all. Sometimes we go on as if we forget about it, believing only in the fall. But the net is just as real. Every day, with every small kindness, with every generous act, we strengthen it. Notice, even now, how the whole world seems to be falling. The net is there for us as we walk the day's tightrope. Notice how every tie matters. Thank you. Let's take 5 minutes, everybody, and we'll come back. Thank you. Oh boy. Welcome back. So on Sunday, I want to tell you about three things coming up. This coming Sunday, March 10th, time change if you're in California or most states and a lot of places. Sunday morning, a couple of times a month, I offer a Sunday Sangha. It's online. You can pop in 10:30 Pacific for an hour and a half. And Carlito will put that in the chat. Everybody is welcome. And then the other thing that is happening on Sunday, 4 o'clock Pacific for 45 minutes, I am offering a workshop with the beloved poet, James Cruz. And we're just going to hang out for 45 minutes and talk poetry and Dharma, have a little meditation. It's free for everyone, everywhere. And this is in anticipation of a retreat that we're teaching in April on poetry, meditation, Dharma, and writing. So here are all the links for it. Come on Sundays for Sunday Sangha. Come to the workshop. It's just really, really, really sweet. So that's what I want to tell you about. All right. So some of you have been hanging out with me a bit, and I love that. And you know how oftentimes we hear the same thing in multiple classes. So if you've been hearing this theme from me lately because you're hanging out with me, this is what we do, right? The Dharma sinks in a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. Every once in a while, somebody says to me, are you ever going to teach anything new? And when this one person said that to me, she said, I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean, you always say the same thing in one way or another. Like, have you noticed that, of course, among Dharma teachers, that we pretty much say the same thing over and over again with different flavors, different sauces, different condiments? That's just what this is. Because what we're talking about is increasing our well-being, decreasing suffering, not only for ourselves, but for each other, and being aware of, I mean, let's just say it, there is so much trouble in the world. And we are not exempt as Dharma practitioners. This practice does not keep us in rarefied air, that we don't know about what's happening. We absolutely know about the pain of the world, but this, again, it fortifies us so we can meet the world and have more capacity for engaged, maybe difficult conversations. So what I've been doing lately, where I'm teaching a lot this first part of the year, is taking a deep look at the paramis. I love the paramis, the perfections of the heart, all these different aspects of the heart that we can cultivate and nurture so they can mature. And so our capacity to love, ultimately, to accept, to engage, grows, that it becomes less threatening to us personally to engage in the truth of living a life. And so here are these beautiful perfections that we talk about: generosity, morality, renunciation, wisdom, patience, truthfulness, determination, loving kindness, and equanimity. Don't they all sound great? Like, who wouldn't want to cultivate those beautiful characteristics? I mean, maybe that's a silly question. I want to cultivate those characteristics. And very often in the many lists of the Buddha, he starts with generosity, saying that that's really where we have to start, is that if our generosity and our morality are not in order, the rest of it doesn't have a strong foundation. But we could argue that point. And who's to argue with the Buddha? Maybe we are, right? I mean, this is part of our questioning. This is part of using our critical thinking to see what supports us, what lights us up, what goes right by us, what are the things we truly get. So there's a central question that I love to bring into our practice that says, how do we understand something? maybe a given teaching. You know, like literally, there may be an academic understanding, a way of just understanding conceptually generosity. Let's use that as an example. But how do we experience it? And there's a very big difference between understanding a concept and experiencing a concept so we actually know what that's like, right? And so that is what we're doing here, I believe, in this practice. That's what I want to do. And you've heard me say this many times. Why does it matter? How is it impacting you? Why is this important? And when I say why does it matter, I don't mean it as, oh, why does it matter? I definitely don't mean that. Because of what Kelly said, we leave an impact. We leave an impact with everything that we do. So why do these teachings matter? What did the Buddha give us that really helps support our lives? And so when I explore and study these paramis, all of them I find are interwoven and they are interdependent. And so even though there's a specific order that they're often taught in, again, generosity, morality, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, determination, loving kindness, and equanimity, that's typically the order. I think it doesn't matter. I think we can start with what resonates for you. What is the one that you're curious about or really feels alive? What is the one or the ones that are just like, yeah, whatever, okay, I'll look at that later. That's natural also. So we come back to this question that I started with earlier in the day. What makes a meaningful life? What is the most important part of your day? And I wonder if anybody be willing to say. You can put it in the chat. Or Catherine, yes, Kat, go for it. I want to hear for sure.
I had a experience of kindness today that was so life-affirming and fulfilling. I have a dear friend who I've known for 35 years, whose son is age is my son, and my son is 36 years old, and he has Fragile X, and I watched my son grow up next to him, my son who is just an ordinary person. And recently her daughter, who has three young boys all under age five, her daughter became pregnant with a child who only had one ventricle, a little girl. And this little girl has been born and has had three surgeries. There's procedures actually to create a ventricle. Your heart has two ventricles, and one ventricle is a very challenging option. So not only has this grandmother now, this woman who I've known forever, had a son who she's committed her life and career to taking care of, who has Fragile X. And Fragile X is on the spectrum of mental retardation. It can be quite extreme. He has a moderate to ex to more. More a challenging case. Now her daughter, her fourth child, has one ventricle. And this woman is so loving and giving, and she dedicates her life to helping these children of hers and grandchildren. And the good news is the young grandchild is doing well after the third surgery, and she's now like 4 months, and she's had two major procedures that are like life, that give her life. And it really speaks to the medicine that is available and the joy and the appreciation we have for that. And so I was at the store getting myself some flowers today, and I thought, Jane needs flowers. And I picked her up some spring tulips and took them to her, and she was at home. And she was just gobsmacked that I showed up with flowers for her. And I gave her a big hug and I said, just because you do all the things you do. And it was so fulfilling. Just appreciate her and her appreciation. And I thought to myself, you know, these simple acts of kindness are so life-affirming. And I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I'm so moved by this, and especially something that you said in the beginning. Our sons are the same age, and my son is an ordinary person. There's an ordinariness to this, that it doesn't have to be extraordinary to bring flowers to somebody. Can it be an ordinary act? And this is generosity, right? This is part of. When you had that inclination, I was buying myself flowers and I needed to buy Jane flowers and show up like that. What a gift. And the ordinariness of that, that doesn't need to be extraordinary. It's just what we do. And I think that in the experience of generosity, I remember Joseph Goldstein teaching on this many years ago where he said, the way to be in relationship with generosity is to not ignore the inclination towards a generous act. When you have the thought, oh, I could do whatever it is, do it. And then in the process of doing it, know it. Take that in. And now you can remember to tell about it. Because generosity gives joy. Three times in the preparation, in the act, in the remembering. And then in the remembering, when you share it with us, we get reminded of ordinary acts of love, of ordinary acts of giving. This does not need to be extraordinary. Thank you. Thank you, Catherine. Carolyn.
Briefly, a year ago, October, I had a crisis, and Donald Rothberg told me to get to as many sanghas as I could. So, Marin County, of course, is one of the ones I went to. Another one I discovered is out of Colorado, Path of Awakening. John Baker, who was a student of, I can never pronounce the names, Trogram
Yeah, Shogyam Trungpa
Him.
Rinpoche.
And John's just a hoot. And just anyway, the point is that at 9 o'clock every morning and 7 o'clock every evening, I might miss one in a 2 week period. I am sitting meditating with them, and they're neat people. Are they these old geezers like me? You know, they're all. There's the young ones too, for sure. We chant, we do this, but it's the regularity and the sense of belonging.
Correct.
I feel
Correct.
belonging in a way to that Sangha and to here with you, to Carlita, to Don, you know,
Sure.
I've made friends sorts over Zoom and just that.
So it's
So,
very meaningful. You know,
yes.
what good advice, what wise advice. Connect, connect, connect.
Connect.
Because it's available. And this is this beauty of Zoom. This is unbelievable, really, what this gives us.
And the Zoom contact with you people has made me less socially awkward.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's really lovely. What a gift.
In person life, I go to the knitting circle with the other old ladies. I'm out and I'm just more aware of how I am in a group. And I'll stop because I can talk forever.
Okay, so I just, you know, I don't know if you do this while you're listening or talking. Do you look at the faces of each other? Oh, look at Lily's hat. She's knitting. That's awesome. So there's a way in which, you know, when you keep your screen on, when you keep your video on and you let yourself be seen, there's a lot of love here. There's a lot of smiles. There's a lot of acknowledgement that is happening. So this is pretty cool. You know, when we want to talk about connection and belonging, and I know I'm not quite giving the formal Dharma talk right now, but this is the Dharma talk. How do we connect? How do we belong? When we talk about what is meaningful, this is what it is. Okay, so I'm going to dive into a little bit of a Dharma talk because we don't have a whole lot of time, but I'll be here next week. So whatever I don't finish today, we're just going to, you know, this is what I mean. It's like, this is endless. We just keep going and going and going. So come next week. I want to start in the middle of the paramis and talk about wisdom, because all those other paramis that I listed are actually things that we can train in, that we can literally practice. But wisdom grows out of practice. What we learn from what we do is the wisdom. I think it's something we already have. And I love hearing, and started hearing this when I first came to this practice, you are already wise. This is this Buddha nature. This is the story of the Buddha, the statue that was uncovered, that had been covered for 500 years. And then the covering started cracking and the monk looks in and he sees the gold. That's what's already here. It is this wisdom, is this felt sense of yes, no, I don't know, not sure. This is what wisdom is. It is something that we have. It is something that we are. It's something that we become. It's something that we nurture. And even the Buddha said, with practice, wisdom grows. When practice wanes, wisdom wanes. It's not that the wisdom isn't in us when practice wanes. And I'm not talking about formal sitting, although that's very helpful. Practice, cultivating these paramis, cultivating awareness, our wisdom grows. And then when we get off track, we forget. Our wisdom might feel a little less accessible, but it's there. It is there. Early on in my practice, I heard one teacher say, if you don't know what to do and you want to access your wisdom, ask your 85-year-old self what to do. Ask your 85-year-old self what to do and you'll know. And I loved that, because that is pointing to that we are already wise. It is in us. When we pause and we listen in and we ask, what's here? What would myself in the fullness of my wisdom? We already know. And if the answer is, I don't know, then we seek help. Then we say questions like Stephen asks, What is this thing about this self-esteem? And then we get the collective wisdom, right? We get it from each other. The Buddha also said in the Dhammapada, this is kind of funny and paradoxical, I love it. The fool, conscious of her foolishness, is wise. The fool, conscious of her foolishness, is to that extent wise. Like, if you know what you're doing, even if it's foolish, you know what you're doing. But a fool who considers herself wise is the one to be called a fool. Be willing to ask, what do I know? What do I not know? What am I not seeing here? Does that make sense to you? Yeah, I love that. Good. So, you know, I know that you have heard this also, that oftentimes the Dharma is thought of as the image of a bird. One wing is the wing of wisdom, the other wing, the wing of compassion, of love, and connected into this body of courage. One wing of wisdom, one wing of compassion, connected in this body. Such a beautiful image, and both wings need each other. Right? And this body that we cultivate needs to be the connective tissue, the foundation that connects wisdom and compassion. Because when wisdom and compassion are alive and connected, we are most aware. We behave so beautifully. And we feel better. We really, and when we feel better, life is easier. When I mean feel better, I'm talking about clarity of mind, heart. And then there's a beautiful teaching from the Indian sage Nisargadatta. Wisdom tells me I am nothing. Love tells me I am everything. In between the two, my life flows. This is a very, very famous teaching that keeps coming back to me over and over again, not because I totally get it, but because I need to keep practicing with that. Wisdom tells me I am nothing. Love tells me I am everything, and in between my life flows to meet unanswerable questions in good company, to be willing to be with these questions. The flow is what's critical here, I think. My life flows between the understanding that I am nothing, the understanding that I am everything. So what does it mean to be nothing? Wisdom tells me I am nothing. Well, if we get really nitty gritty about being nothing, if we look at the teachings of not self, of impermanence, we come to the very real understanding that this body, if we're just going to talk about this physical body, is made up of impermanent processes. We have cycles of illness and wellness to varying degrees. But the body itself, if you think about all of the different systems in the body, muscles, bones, tendons, ligaments, organs, fluids, hormones, I mean, air, lungs, you know, the circulation, the brain, the nervous system, it's mind-boggling. All of the different systems that are somehow working together to keep us alive. So where is the me in there? I have no idea, right? The way this consciousness me thing works. So wisdom says, yeah, I'm a bunch of processes. And in that way, we know that the Buddha taught in anatta, there is no solid self inside of here. Even though my personality exists, my views exist, I feel pretty solid. But it's kind of a myth. So when we look at the wisdom of understanding the Four Noble Truths, that suffering is ubiquitous, there's a cause of it, there's ability to release, there's a path that helps us work with that, that often, pretty reliably, the cause of our suffering are these three, what are known as the three poisons, greed, ill will, and ignorance, confusion. The unwillingness, the difficulty of being with things exactly as they are, because when they are painful, we push it away. When they're beautiful and wonderful, we hold on. Right? I mean, this is what it means to be living this human life. And that the fog, the ignorance, the confusion, how are our views and our conditioning, how do they keep us from really being in our lives with that kind of courage? And they do. We all have views and opinions. We all have conditioning, but we come here to peel back the layers over and over again, and we support each other to have the courage to peel back these layers a little bit, because we understand the truth of dukkha and of permanence, of interconnection. So that is the wisdom to know I am nothing, yet I am everything, because I am part of everything, and I leave an imprint. What I do matters. So it's a little bit mind-twisting to really dive into, yeah, I really matter, but I really don't. I think it's a little bit of a mind twist. And this is what we wrestle with. And love tells me I am everything, because life is so incredibly precious. Incredibly precious and tender and poignant and impermanent. How can we do anything but love, to feel that compassion for ourselves and each other? Exactly what we were discussing about Catherine talking about recognizing somebody else's suffering and just showing up. Jean talking about oh my God, my pain lifted. All the things that we talk about, this is about coming into the poignancy of loving and how necessary it is. So this flow is critical. In between the nothingness and the everythingness is this flow. Here's a beautiful piece from Louise Erdrich, the beautiful novelist. She says, you have to love. You have to feel. It's the reason you are here on earth. You are here to risk your heart. You are here to be swallowed up. And when it happens that you are broken or betrayed or left or hurt or death brushes near, let yourself sit by an apple tree and listen to the apples falling all around you in heaps, wasting their sweetness. Tell yourself you tasted as many as you could. That's being present for your life. Let yourself sit by an apple tree. She says, you have to love, you have to heal, feel. It's the reason you are here on earth. You are here to risk your heart. Because if we don't risk our hearts, what are we doing? Right? We can be insulated and isolated and cut off, but I don't think that's what we really want. So let yourself sit by an apple tree and listen to the apples fall all around you in heaps, wasting their sweetness. Tell yourself you tasted as many as you could. I don't think they waste their sweetness, literally. You know, they nurture the earth. All kinds of old, mushy fruit falls from trees back onto the earth and nurtures the earth herself. So this is a helpful way for how I relate to this parami of wisdom, is this deeper understanding of who we are and how we are and the possibilities. I want to end today with a piece from Andrea Gibson. Andrea is the poet laureate of Colorado, and they are a master of spoken word poetry. And I love reading her Substack. And what they wrote about the other day, they said, lately, whenever I'm having a hard moment, if I see or hear a bird, I'm immediately snapped back into presence. I truly feel like the birds are communicating with me, whispering their sweet somethings. I took some time recently to imagine what the birds are actually trying to tell me, and I wrote it down and recorded it. And here it is. This is from Andrea Gibson, writing down the poem that the birds told her.
We sing after the storm. We sing during it. We sing to the blizzard. We sing to the percussion of the hail. We sing to the lightning and we harmonize with the thunder. What are you doing with your vocal cords? Why on earth are your eyes still closed? It's dawn and our song is on your aspen tree's radio. Feather your hair and get out here with your high notes. Why stay in bed when you could be high-fiving the sunrise? Human awe is an endangered species. Do not let your astonishment go extinct. Go wild for the wildness of your being. Sing off-key and call it a yet-to-be-invented note. Why are you acting like a birdcage caught your heart? No matter what hurts, love yourself enough to never think your ribcage is locked. Just because your life isn't a piece of cake doesn't mean it can't be sweet. We know you've been taught the opposite, but for goodness sakes, think your own thoughts. Don't be a parrot on the world's shoulder. Ask new questions like, what do I have in common with the person who I judge most? Why is loving someone who doesn't love me back a sad tune? Isn't the one who loves the one who is lucky? Consider the possibility that no one can break your trust. It's your trust, after all. Write this down with a feather pen. Our emotions are doors opened by our willingness to feel them. You can feel sad without chaining yourself to sadness. You can feel fear without believing that fear is the truth. If that feels difficult at first, just wing it. That's our motto. Just wing it. It is absolutely possible to make a nest of a hurricane, to make a clearing of the fog. Keep asking yourself this question, what love can I make of this loss? Humans are nightshades. You grow in the dark. Does that mean you are made by your pain? No. Does that mean you are made by your decision to turn your pain into medicine for the world? No. You are made by knowing that you can't be made or unmade. Understand who you are without your beliefs about who you should be. Stop clipping the wings of life's magic. Beneath your running mind is a heart that knows that kind of exercise is ridiculous. Every day is a great day to hatch wonder. Rubble the walls between yourself and everyone until you're sure the scenes of strangers' lives will pass before your eyes when you die. If that doesn't make sense right now, it will one morning. When you wake at sunrise, walk out to your porch and see a flock of 10,000 starlings circling above your head. There I am, you'll think, looking up at us. There I am.
Isn't that beautiful? Really, really beautiful. You can read that if you like Andrea Gibson. And we'll talk more about this next week because we only have 5 minutes. But the wisdom of human awe is an endangered species. Do not let your astonishment go extinct. What do I have in common with the person I judge most? Why is loving someone who doesn't love me back a sad tune? Isn't the one who loves the one who is lucky? My emotions are doors opened by my willingness to feel them. You can feel sad without chaining yourself to sadness. You can feel fear without believing fear is the truth. If that feels difficult at first, just wing it. Oh, come in. What a line. Just wing it. All right, we're going to start next week where we're leaving off, but we have 4 minutes. Does anybody have something you really want to bring in? I mean, like, what happened for you listening to that? Anybody who hasn't spoken? Cynthia, please.
I'm blown away that you did that at the end. The whole thing has completely blown me away. The whole episode, all of this, everyone that's talked, it's just been amazing to me. But we have had snow for the last week, which we don't usually have, and we've had a couple feet, and I've been really getting into, I actually have a meditation hut, and I look out and I've gotten into the birds. And so in the last week, I have bought 2 40-pound bags of bird seed.
Nice.
And put them all around our property so that we can see from every window the birds. And I have totally experienced what you just read, watching the birds in the snowstorm, in the rain, in the wind, all of it. And I have had so many of these thoughts. I just thank you. It's completely
you.
A blessing.
So
thank
cool.
you.
So look up Andrea Gibson. Get on her Substack. It's brilliant.
Thank you.
Substack. You're welcome. Elizabeth, you get the last word.
It's so apropos what you've done today. It's just so amazing. And I got to say, I have this big bottle brush bush on the hill behind my house. And I've been watching the scrub jays. They nest there. They have their babies there. There's one who sits on the top and just guards the bush. And this has been going on for years. And today I felt like I was getting a message from this scrub jay. He flew into a tree right next to the back window, and he had a big peanut in his mouth. And I was thinking, oh, somebody's giving this bird peanuts and it isn't me. And I just thought, you know, I should be more grateful to them. I do put bird seed out every now and then, but I just felt this, you know, connection to this this beautiful scrub jay. And I don't like calling him a scrub jay because that doesn't sound good. But the color, he's such a beautiful blue bird, and I just appreciate it. And I know there's more than one up there, but I can't tell who's who.
No, we can't tell who's who.
But it just brought back the fact that when I get up in the morning, sometimes I just go, oh, I gotta get out of bed. I just go, oh, this is another day. And it just opened my heart today to feel like, oh, yes, it's another day. And I need to be more open and more appreciative of the fact that I am waking up and I get to experience another beautiful day.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm glad somebody's giving peanuts to the scrub jays. It's great. Oh, everybody, it's such a delight. Thank you for being with me and us and each other today. We will pick up, maybe we'll begin next week with this so we can really enjoy this piece from Andrea and dive into it, understanding so many things from it. I'm very grateful to you. Notice what's meaningful to you as you go through the next week. Keep track of it. Maybe take a note each day. What was meaningful today? All right, everybody. Come meet me on Sunday if you want. Sunday Sangha. I'll be here next Wednesday. May all beings be peaceful and happy and come to the end of suffering truly. Thank you. See you soon.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.